Everybody, this is Dominique, and if you're ready to do more with your life and money, I want you to stay tuned. Today, the final part of our three-part series of comparing different investment strategies. Today, we'll walk through the different elements of an investment policy statement and how that determines whether your strategy is going to be growth, income, or a combination of both of them. So stay tuned.
Are you tired of feeling like there's more to life that you're just not experiencing? Are you unmotivated by keeping up with the status quo? Are you ready to start living intentionally with your finances and creating the life you want? Get ready for Experiencing Financial Contentment with Dominique Henderson, a podcast focused on helping you create margin for the life you want to live by putting your money where your heart is. Each week, Dominique will help you explore the decisions you make around money so that you can achieve better results. Now, here's your host, Dominique Henderson.
All right, welcome back. This is Dominique Henderson, owner and founder of DJH Capital Management, where we're helping our clients achieve their ideal financial outcome, and host of this podcast, Experiencing Financial Contentment. We are here to help you to do more with your life and money, all around the themes of financial literacy, economic empowerment, and personal development. I like to say that if you're ready to take that red pill to leave the matrix of the average, stay tuned. Welcome back to our repeat listeners and viewers. And if you're new, stay tuned. Today, we're covering part three of a three-part series where we're basically comparing the different investment strategies. So being a student in the market for over two decades now, or close to two decades, I've learned some tidbits around tax, around putting together different investment strategies while managing institutional portfolios. And so we've been sharing those nuggets of wisdom over the last 3 weeks. And today we're going to really dive into what I feel is the foundation of any investment strategy, no matter whether it's growth or income or a combination of those two objectives. You've got to have an investment policy statement. And we've covered this in previous podcasts, but I really want to shed some light on each part of the investment policy statement and why it's necessary to determine whether or not you're going to employ a certain strategy. So let's dive right in today. And we'll pull over the screens. So here we have a pyramid of sorts, and I just want to kind of walk through each element of this. Now, this is something I do in my practice. Whenever a client comes to me for wealth management and we're going to be constructing a method or an objective or a strategy on how we're going to grow their money, how we're going to employ an investment strategy that's right for them, we always begin with what I call an investment policy statement. This is something that the CFA Institute uses. It's used by a lot of financial planner practitioners just because it governs how we're going to invest. It captures your risk and return preferences and a whole lot of stuff that I'm about to get into right now. And I'm gonna tell you why it's important, each of these elements, and why you really shouldn't be employing a strategy unless these answers have been gone through and these questions asked. So let's talk about risk. So risk really, I think, kind of falls in two categories, right? But it's all really measured around this volatility measure or risk measure called standard deviation. Standard deviation is simply how much does a particular result deviate from the average or the mean. So let's say the mean return or the average return for stocks is 10%. Well, some years it's going to be minus 12, some years is going to be 20%, some years it's going to be minus 33%. Those are results that deviate from the mean a certain distance, right? And if you aggregate all those, you get what is called a volatility measure or a standard deviation. Typically speaking, that most people don't like a lot of volatility in the portfolios. And you can always kind of measure what your portfolio does as far as risk is returned through standard deviation. So I like to bifurcate risk even further and say there's your ability to handle risk and there's your willingness to handle risk. So when we're sitting down and you're my client and we're talking about risk tolerance, we're going to look at your quantitative ability. So we're going to look at your balance sheet. We're going to look at your income statement, but we're also going to look at your willingness. We're going to look at what you think about risk, the cognitive part of it, what's going on in your head when you see your portfolio do this. So those are two measures that I like to incorporate through a risk tolerance questionnaire. And then we can talk about return preferences. So like I just mentioned, the stock market, you know, domestic U.S. stocks usually, you know, return about 10% on average since probably 1927 or so if you measure the S&P. And so what do you need in order to live the life that you want both now and in the future, right? That's a math equation that we can just kind of plug some numbers to look at what return you would require in your portfolio. And some people say, I want 30%. Well, typically speaking, the more return you want, the more risk you have to have. And the less return you want, the less risk you have to have. So that is risk and return preferences. Then you would talk about liquidity needs. These start to get into the constraints of how we're going to invest your money. So liquidity would be, do you need some money in the next couple of years or so? You know, like pre-retirees may be looking with a shorter investment horizon, which we'll get into the second spot. But how much emergency fund money do you have access to that so you don't have to touch the investment? So that would be really liquidity needs that we're talking about there. And do you have to sell something to get to this money? I typically say, you know, 6 to 9 months outside, depending on your vocation and how much, I guess, cash flow it takes to run your household every month. That can be adjusted. But, you know, typically 6 months of reserve cash is pretty good outside of your investments so that you don't have to touch your investment strategy. Time horizon. Are we looking at a 20-year-old or 25-year-old that just started their career? Or are we looking at a 59-year-old or a 60-year-old or something like that? So the time horizon is big because obviously the longer you invest, the more times your money can compound and the faster or the more that it can grow. If you have a constrained time horizon, it's going to affect a lot of different things, probably how much risk you want to handle and how much return you want. There's going to be a lot of different factors depending on your time horizon. So all those things need to be looked at. Do you have any legal constraints? Do you have any gifting concerns? Is there, you know, maybe money's tied up in a trust that you don't have access to until you're of the age of majority? You know, sometimes this happens with, you know, sudden wealth particular cases. Is your money part of maybe a divorce decree, like a QDRO or something like that? So those are different things that you have to incorporate because it will affect the type of investment strategy. And last but not least, taxes. We talked about in the very first part of this series. Are you a legal citizen? Are you an expatriate? You know, expatriates can only make so much income that is not taxed, you know, in their jobs overseas. And so there's different constraints that go all into this investment policy statement that an investment manager like myself looks at that and creates a customized investment strategy that will most fit your needs. You know, it'd be great to earn, you know, 20% a year or 50% a year or something like that. But if you were paying half of that away in taxes or more, you know, you may start to question that strategy because that's obviously not the most efficient strategy. There's different ways to minimize your tax liability. So those need to go into that. And so all those different factors will basically dictate the strategy that is employed, whether that be growth, meaning that you're really looking for capital appreciation, something beyond what inflation returns so that you can at least keep up with keep the purchasing power of your money. Or is it going to be more income in nature? Are you basically trying to monetize a big pool of assets that you've already accumulated, say through a working career of 40 or 50 years, and now you have a couple of million dollars, and what you want to do instead of getting a paycheck because you're going to retire, you want to start, you know, having a portfolio kick off, you know, X amount a month that you can spend just like you were getting a paycheck. So that's a strategy also. Or you may want a combination of those both for whatever reason, and it may need to be, you know, some tax-free, some taxable. So these are all the different things that go into creating an investment strategy. And I've seen the gamut in nearly two decades of it. And it just kind of depends on that person that is looking to invest. So Hopefully that's been helpful. That is winding up, that has wound up our three-part series on comparing different investment strategies. So you can know, you know, kind of think about the direction that you want to start to go in and whether or not you want to be, you know, self-directed, or you want to use an automated wealth platform, or you want to use an advisor, whether you want to minimize your taxes on the front end or try to minimize those on the back end. All these different things go into your investment strategy. And like I said, hopefully this has been helpful for you. If you want to continue this discussion, we can always do that inside the Facebook group, Creating Your Roadmap to Financial Contentment. We're in there trying to help you with financial literacy, economic empowerment, and personal development topics. We can talk about this or we can talk about something else. But we'd love to see you there. My open invite for you to join. Thank you for watching. Thank you for listening. And we'll see you back next time. Bye-bye.